Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Chris Tindall and Woody Nipa to the podcast. Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So today we're going to talk about how do bearing isolators really help us drive reliability? How do they ensure lubrication reliability? And how do they generally help us improve our uptime in our facilities? But before we do that, gentlemen, if I could get you to briefly introduce yourself. Chris, you're a regional business manager with SEPCO. How long have you been involved with maintenance reliability?
I spent most of my career focused on mechanical integrity and asset inspection services, managing condition monitoring programs and consulting and providing training for vibration and oil analysis and troubleshooting equipment in the field. I was first introduced to reliability-centered maintenance 23 years ago while working for Alcoa in the mining and chemical refining industry. And I spent about 15 years with Alcoa learning how to apply RCM and lean manufacturing principles to optimize maintenance job plans for lubrication and condition monitoring PMs. And I found myself engulfed in the lubrication process and the challenges that come along with maintaining clean lubricants in a mining environment. And I was living a great case study for dealing with accelerated wear rates in equipment. So needless to say, proactive lubrication was fundamental to our reliability plan, and we were always looking for ways to integrate advances in technology with breathers and seals and filters with our procedures to prevent or even remove contaminants from oil and extend our lubricant life. Then after leaving the mining industry, I spent several years working for a reliability consulting company and had the opportunity to work in the oil and gas industries, auditing and optimizing PSM programs and providing training on RCM and lean manufacturing. And I learned that while the mining environment forced us to focus on lubrication practices, lubrication was always a part of the PSM conversation for maintaining rotating assets and for mechanical integrity, and it still provided some of the easiest reliability opportunities, even in the cleanest chemical operations. Now today, as a regional manager for SEPCO, I'm able to work with a much larger variety of manufacturing plants and refineries along the Texas Gulf Coast, and I get to apply my background in RCM and in lubrication to help our customers improve pump reliability and ultimately maximize the life cycle of their mechanical seals.
Excellent. And Woody, how about yourself?
I've been in the industry for about 35 years. I spent a lot of time at Gould's Pumps, where I was the chief field engineer, director of marketing engineering for the aftermarket. The focus of my career pretty much has been on reliability, improving reliability of centrifugal pumps, and then eventually branching out into the reliability of the entire system. I spent 12 years working for Impro Seal, and there's where I really got to see the rest of the world as far as rotating equipment goes. And the basics still applied regardless. It's just a lot of times it was just unique applications, but all the principles of machinery engineering still applied regardless of what you were looking at. So that's kind of where I was at.
Excellent. So today we're going to talk about bearing isolators. But before we do, what is a bearing isolator?
It's essentially a seal that bearing isolator was coined by ImproSeal, who pioneered this technology a long, long time ago. And the intent of this, the meaning of it was to isolate the bearing from the environment, from the external environment. What it really is, what they really do is, because the name's a little misleading, is they really isolate the lubricating oil from the environment. The bearing sitting in the oil, that's what you're really protecting. So it's a nice name, not quite as descriptive of what you're really trying to do, though.
Excellent. And with that, are there different types of isolators that are out there, or is there just one type and that is it?
Well, there's several different types. You can break it out into a couple of different categories. I like to look at it from a contact versus non-contacting perspective. So in contacting seals, you have things like elastomeric lip seals, which have traditionally been used in rotating equipment for years and years. And then you have the magnetic face seals, which are essentially mechanical seals that you're adding another set of mechanical seals to your pumping system or whatever it is you're trying to seal. And so you have those. And then you have the what you'll call the quasi non-contacting seals, those types of labyrinth seals that use dynamic O-rings. Now, those seals are contact seals. They're marketed as non-contact seals, but in fact, they are in contact, certainly through the break-in period. And at that point, after those seals break in, they tend to be lose some of their sealing capability. So the real trick is what's next is non-contact sealing. And that's where the industry has evolved, or we're trying to evolve the industry to, is true non-contact sealing, because you'll have consistent performance from day one till the day you pull that piece of equipment out. Could be 175,000 hours runtime on it, and the machine will still be there, where the other technologies have a finite life.
All right, so the contact bearing isolators, you know, they're making contact mechanically with, you know, the rotating elements, stuff of that nature. So they will eventually wear out over time, versus our non-contact, where they're not making any contact, so they will run and almost indefinitely then, correct?
Yeah, you'll get a longer life. You certainly get a longer life from a non-contact seal. There's nothing in there to wear out. And so its performance will be consistent, like I said, from day one to the time the machine comes out. Chris really was on the forefront of this when all this stuff went down in that late 80s and the 90s, and he saw the results. So I think he could probably comment on the different technologies firsthand, because he was living with it in a little different way than maybe a lot of people. So
Chris?
Yeah, definitely. That is something that when going back 20 or so years ago, the labyrinth technologies that were emerging that were taking the place of the traditional contacting lip seal was great technology. It was pioneering new levels of reliability for protecting machine lubricants. You know, we call them bearing protectors, but as Woody alluded to, it's more about protecting the lubricant, which thus protects the bearing. And as we recognize the importance of lubricant and protecting the lubricants, I was actually working in a refining / mining industry at that time. And so we, in a mining industry, contaminants are one of the biggest enemies to reliability, especially in regards to lubrication. So we were very interested in looking at these technologies. And as Woody alluded to, again, the labyrinth technology, while it was a huge step forward in performance over a lip seal, they did have contacting mechanisms that were there to create static seals when the machine wasn't operating. And because of that, the performance would decay over time. And so as we were looking at different technologies, we went through all of the different contacting, different ways of reducing that contacting. Some labyrinth designs use O-rings, multiple O-rings. Some of them use Teflon wedges. And we found that in the recent years, in the last decade or less, that's been a move more towards non-contacting designs. We've realized that that in a static state, you don't have to make a complete hermetic seal. You don't have to close the seal down.
Yeah, that's it exactly. It's you can. There's other ways to do it if you take a step back and look at the actual system and what's happening there. You know, we found that we found this when I was with a large pump company, I was charged with reliability, and we saw if you were, I was a young field engineer, and I remember installing a bunch of API pumps, and they had steam quenches and all the mechanical seals, and they had the latest and greatest technology, which was the Impro Seal Company, and there's no question about it. They were the leader. We got those pumps started up, and I was pretty anal about my installations, and I went back the next day and checked it. Everything was perfect, except all of a sudden I looked down at our pump bearing housing, and the oil's a little bit milky, and as it turns out, this technology has had some shortcomings. And so as we evolved in the industry, I moved on and I started actually working for that company. And I saw the shortcomings. And as Chris was talking about, as soon as you get into the heavy solids, he was alluding to that in the mining industry, once it gets inside the seal, those elements, it really, there's no way for the heavy contaminants to get out. So it makes more sense to focus on keeping that stuff out than ever allowing it in. And the technology that Chris has referred to with the flying O-rings, they tend to let it in because they advertise that they're going to expel it once it gets in. The reality is once it gets into the seal body itself, it doesn't expel out.
Excellent. So definitely a major improvement in technologies, generating significant improvements in reliability and performance for everyone involved. But how do these bearing isolators actually work? Are the principles the same between the contact or non-contact?
No. Let's look at probably start right at the beginning with lip seals. Lip seals, obviously a friction device that's in contact with the sleeve or shaft itself. It was designed, and the way they work is they're little radio positive displacement pumps almost, if you look at them microscopically, and they're designed to retain lubrication. So they're in contact. The problem with lip seals traditionally is they'll retain lubrication for a while. They are going to wear out. But at the same time, that pumping action tends to draw contamination in. So that's what everything was compared to. Now we moved on to the compound labyrinth seals. And we'll jump right ahead to where we're at today. They were pioneered by the Impro Seal Company, and their claim to fame there was that they have a O-ring that's internal to the seal, and it expands centrifugally over 360 degrees as soon as the seal starts up. And that allows the bearing housings to vent and breathe, which enables the end user to put a plug in his vent on his bearing frame, which is a big source of contamination statically. So when much of the reputation was gained by Impro by comparing it to the performance of lip seals. Now, there was a lot of people that came out there with some Me Too type of products, and I hate to disparage anybody, but they turned into more marketing things, and they tried to gimmick or to mimic what the Impro seal was claiming to do. The problem with it was, even when I was at Gould's, and then my reality of the situation at Impro was, I never had ever observed a situation where that O-ring had expanded and contracted. The dynamic O-ring is more of a marketing thing because they are truly static. So they essentially turn into shaft packing, but the seal is designed as a compound labyrinth of seals. And so what they rely on to get rid of the contamination that gets into the seal is these large expulsion ports at the 6 o'clock position, which statically turn out to be a double-edged sword because they also allow contamination in, especially in a heavy steam environment. That's how the traditional bearing isolator, shall we say, works. Then you have in this category, I guess I skipped ahead, is the magnetic face seals, which are essentially mechanical seals. Now, Chris can tell you firsthand, and there's been enough written on this, that mechanical seals are the source of many reliability issues. And the fact is that bearing isolators really became popular as mechanical seals grew because the reliability of mechanical seals, they determined, were directly affected by the condition of the bearings. Okay, so the mechanical seal, the magnetic face seal, essentially what you just did is you added a level of complexity to your system because you added two mechanical seals or in some cases three, depending on your bearing housing configuration, to your pump on top of the mechanical seal that you're trying to keep alive. These seals all require one basic thing, and that's lubrication across the faces. Without it, they don't function very well. I know that many manufacturers' mag seals exist out there. They've all struggled with face loadings and things like that, and they've proven to be very expensive, and the failure rate is significant enough that it wouldn't be worth, in my opinion, the investment, unless you had a specific niche application where you thought it would work, which tends to be slow-moving, flooded applications. But so that's how the mag seal works. Then you have a true non-contact seal. Now, obviously, we're here for a reason. We've designed one. But what we did is we took a different approach to it. It couldn't be a me-too approach. What we looked at is the energy of the system. So we're utilizing the system's own energy to expel contamination dynamically. And then, then in conjunction with the features of the seal, break that energy down statically, turn any of the vapor-borne contaminant that's trying to come through the seal statically, which is pretty much what it will be, water or vapor-borne, at that point. We break the energy of that contaminant down, and we have a small static drain at the bottom that we allow it to weep out through. But it's a condensate drain is what we call it. And that is a true non-contact seal. We do utilize O-rings internally, but they create throttling gaps for any residual energy that might be left over from the contaminant. So we're relying on basically the laws of physics on this, just simplifying the process of the seal and working with the laws of physics and instead of trying to come up with some type of mechanical thing that doesn't make sense, like a O-ring that expands and contracts. The O-rings don't do that. So again, taking a system approach to it, it allowed us to incorporate features into the seal to take advantage of the system's own energy to expel and exclude contamination dynamically and statically.
Excellent. So we have the different technologies available to us. We have an understanding of how they work. Why would organizations want to move to install bearing isolators or upgrade their existing ones?
Well, I think when you're dealing with reliability of your lubrication system, it's measurable, and it's something that we understand that having the right lubricant in the right quantity in the right place at the right time is essential to reliability. And we know that we need to have the right viscosity, maintain clean lubricants free of generally water, liquid contaminants, and particulate. The good news is that's measurable. You can take an oil sample and you can measure and quantify objectively the contents of the oil, and you can measure changes in the quality of the lubricant. So there's several accessories that are sold in the markets for industrial equipment, different types of desiccant breathers, loop filtration systems to remove contaminants, and also to remove water through various means of vacuum dehydration, for instance.
You know, can I jump in here on this? I can tell you that years ago, Chris lives down on the Gulf Coast, and I spent a majority of my career down there. We were baffled. We had what we felt at the time. I'm not here to advertise anybody's oil, but I had one particular synthetic that I used, and we had a 55-gallon drum in there, and the guys at BASF in Freeport took some out and were putting it in their pumps, and then they checked the oil sample. And it had the best oil seals at the time on there. We had Impro seals on there. They certainly would have lasted longer than what the oil sample indicated. We had water in there. Doing a little root cause failure analysis, what we found was the source of the water was in the storage drums. It was the condensation that built up in the storage drums, building water up, getting water in there, and we ended up in. So I didn't mean to cut in on Chris, but one of your sources besides the rotating equipment is how you store your lubricants. Very important.
Oh, very much. And that's, you know, the number one goal is to get clean lubricants, the right lubricant in the right state. Get it into the machine clean, free of water and particle contaminants. And we spend a lot of time focusing on that. We've moved away from traditional oil cans that were open and exposed, realizing that we needed, sealed containers. And so there's a whole market for that, color coding containers to make sure that you get the right lubricant. You're not mixing or putting the wrong lubricant viscosity into the machine. But, so we go through, to great extents to provide clean lubricants. We filter lubricants when they come in. Most customers, have realized, or most users, consumers have realized that, that the lubricants come in, they're not even at the right quality as far as, there's, polishing that needs to be done to remove particles before the oil goes into the machine. And so that's where I was at as an end user. And I think a lot of people find themselves looking at, we've achieved our goal of getting clean lubricants to the machine and we're trying to preserve that. And so, we put desiccant breathers and we would add, upgrading technologies for isolators. So, everyone's looking for how to preserve that lubricant the longest. And then we all see a decay. And I know for myself personally, as we started upgrading isolators, we would move from traditional lip seals to Labyrinth technologies such as the Impro and even contacting seals. We were looking at all the different options on the market. We would start taking oil samples and we find that the lubricant was clean when it was added. But then over a period of time that could be, a few weeks, a few months, we would notice that we would start to receive, we would start to accumulate, contaminants, moisture in particulate. And, the first thought was to go to the practices. So we were looking at, perhaps people were topping off the machines with, contaminated lubricants. So we would isolate the machines. And that's when we discovered that, that the technology wasn't foolproof and in fact had a finite life. Looking at, trying to determine where the contaminants were coming from, we started to evaluate the processes. We were looking at, how lubricants were added to the machine. We assumed that we were, using contaminated lubricants, that the containers, the transfer containers had become contaminated, or that we were contaminating during the process. In fact, we went from pouring lubricants in, being in a mining environment, it was very, there was places, in the process where it's extremely dusty. So we would have quick connection fittings to where we would pump lubricants into the machine, to prevent the contaminant and transfer. And so we were going through, to great extremes to try to preserve and maintain clean lubricants getting into the machine. What we discovered that, the dynamic parts, the places where the shafts enter the machine and where we would have, what we're referring to as bearing isolators or seals, shaft seals, it was a great improvement over a lip seal as far as the wear rates and the contaminant rates, but we were still, at some point receiving, starting to accumulate contaminants. And that's where, the good news is it's measurable. You can look at the performance because the intent of a shaft seal is to keep lubricants in and keep contaminants out. So therefore, functional failure occurs when that device begins to break down and no longer can achieve your goal, your functional goal. So it's easy to find functional failure of these components and therefore establish value by the different designs.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Excellent. So organizations are really looking at these Behrend isolators to preserve the clean lubricant that already goes in to preserve, the bearings, the shafts, all those things, correct?
No, that's what you're doing, but they're really doing it for reliability. This whole conversation is about machinery reliability. And, you know, when we talk about it, I like to emphasize to people that the bearing isolator is a very, very small component to the whole reliability equation. If you don't install your pump properly, if your bases aren't level, if you don't control your pipe strain and understand how your pipe, your thermal conditions, how things are moving, and all of those things that go with a real reliability program, if you don't do that and you just put bearing isolators on, it won't mean a big difference. You're not going to see a real positive effect or impact. You'll have clean oil, but you'll still wear bearings out and fail mechanical seals due to other conditions. So, but if you do all those other conditions, if you do all of the above and you don't put bearing isolators on, you've just wasted all your money and investment in making your system as reliable as possible by making sure you get get things installed properly. You've sized everything right. Everything is right. And then you decide to go on allow the OEM who typically will have selected their bearing seals based on cost, they'll allow them to select that for them. And they end up with a compromised position overall, even though they think they've done everything right. So the bearing isolator is a very small part of it. Without you can't do all of the above and expect results without it. That's for sure. But so I guess that's my point is you really need to do all of the things, including the bearing isolators.
Yes, absolutely. It is, there's, like you alluded to, multiple pieces to it. Did we spec it properly? Did we install it properly? Are we doing the right preventative maintenance? Are we doing all those, or even operating it properly? All those things go into this.
Yeah. And what we've found in recent times is people have gotten away from the practical part of reliability engineering. I find that they get so caught up in analysis that they forget about what they're really there for sometimes. Many maintenance staffs have been cut down and it's contracted out, and they don't have the training or the understanding of what they're really trying to do because no one's explained it to them. So we find a lot of those situations too, as well in the reliability world. So we're trying to go through an educational process with people about making sure these things are done right and then ensuring the results if you do them right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, with bearing isolators, are they used exclusively on pumps or can they be used on other rotating equipment?
If it has a set of bearings, generally we can use bearing isolators. I'll let Chris jump in there. You've seen a lot more pieces of equipment than me, but usually we're limited by real estate only.
All right. What do you mean by limited by real estate?
Sometimes machines aren't really designed. They're vintage designs, older designs. They've been making them for years and years, and they really weren't. They were designed with lip seals. They really weren't designed for bearing isolators, which take up a little bit more physical space. And so you find that's the biggest issue. We sometimes just don't have the room to put them in, and we'll end up having to do a modification, which is very common. We do that because if you're out there solving a problem, which is what we're doing, we're providing a solution, and the customer is motivated to implement a solution, they don't have a problem with remachining because we can understand where our end goal is. And yes, you do change a piece of equipment from the original standard, but if the original OEM piece of equipment isn't working, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to stay with it when you can do something much better. So we oftentimes have to upgrade a piece of equipment to adapt a seal to it. But very few, unless you're just jammed with no space whatsoever, no axial space, we generally can get something in.
All right, excellent. So we can retrofit older pieces of equipment.
Yes.
Perfect. Now, we've talked a lot about bearing isolators, but are there any other thoughts on bearing isolators that we didn't cover that we want to make sure we touch on?
What happens is marketing gets in the way a lot of times, and they want to tell you that the bearing isolator is the answer to all your problems. Well, it's really not if you don't stick to machine, if you don't have the machinery basics down. If your system isn't designed, if isn't a quality design on the system you're putting the piece of equipment in, you're going to be compromised right out of the gate. Now, the bearing isolator is always going to help you. There's no question about it. I would never purchase a piece of rotating equipment without one personally. But, again, it's about reliability and taking care of the customer and providing them with the guidance sometimes they need. I can tell you in my past life, I've walked away from things because I would tell them you're going to spend a lot of money on these seals and it's not going to help you at all. Now, if you choose to buy it, that's up to you. But I just want you to know I can't affect your reliability in a positive way unless you do the other things. So it's a matter of, it goes beyond being with about isolators. It's about communicating with your customer, and they need help. Some of our customers really are shorthanded. You know, they've got a lot of young people on staff now that don't have the experience. So we have to provide those solutions and explain it to them. So it goes beyond bearing isolators is my point.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes much, much further than just those individual components. It's that entire system working together.
It's a system approach. Exactly. It's a system approach to reliability, a very practical system approach. And again, much has been written about reliability over the years, but it doesn't seem to be, in many cases, doesn't seem to come together in a way that it should. It's scattered pieces of information here and there. There was some work done in the old days, though, by some of the refinery guys at Amoco and places like that that set the industry standards. And especially in refining where they've adopted all of those principles, which is why they have such good reliability. Plus, they use oil mist lubrication, and that helps a lot.
Yes, we've had Heinz Block on the podcast talking about oil mist lubrication and some of those things that, you know, petrochemical is using, oil is using to extend the life of pumps, and they definitely take a full systems approach to it.
Oh yeah, oil mist is the, in my opinion, and I think Chris would share this, is if you're looking for the optimal way to lubricate your bearings, that would be it. It's the downside to oil mist is it's an expensive system to put in, so you have to be able to justify it. It is something that has to be maintained. So in your RCM practices, now you've added another component to your system, and a relatively complex component to your system. And then there's the environmental concern. I don't know if it's environmental as much as it's OSHA, but you have, in most cases, the traditional labyrinth seals tend to allow the oil mist to escape the bearing housing. And there's some people that say they've got seals that work, but the fact that they don't. They either have contacting components in there that wear out eventually, or they put some type of goop in there to try to contain the mist for a short period of time. Again, the new technology, what we've looked at with our non-contact seal is containing oil mist. And we don't have a lot of them installed, but the ones that we do have installed have worked very well. So oil mist containment is, to me, one of the big challenges for us as people in the seal business moving forward. We think we've got a solution. I'm sure everybody else says their solution works. But again, we've seen many cases where you have mist coming out of the bearing housing, and it plates out all over the place, and it turns into a safety issue. And eventually, if it rains hard enough, an environmental issue ends up in the waterways and stuff like that.
Yep, absolutely. Now, it sounds like bearing isolators are one part to that system approach to reliability. But what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today on bearing isolators? What do you want them to do?
Well, I guess there's a couple of things. The first is what we just talked about. Understand that they are a very, very small but very important part of the reliability equation. Without them, there's no way to maximize your reliability. And so, it's like an insurance policy for people to help in the goal of asset utilization, right? You buy these just to ensure you're going to get that much more life out of your piece of equipment. And it's a safety issue. If you're in a situation where you're pumping a volatile or hazardous fluid, you lose a mechanical seal, that can be a dangerous thing. We see that. So, you have to consider all of those things, and reliability is really driven by safety at the end of the day. That's your number one thing. And then the other thing I would like them to leave with is that there's a market perception that, like Kleenex, that there's one brand out there. There isn't. There's other technologies. And when you're relying on your OEM to provide those, your bearing seals, what they end up doing, again, it was originally, I can assure you that their judgment or their choice was based on cost as much as performance, but primarily cost. And so they're not necessarily in a position, it's a small part of their pump or their motor or whatever it is. They're not looking to add any work for themselves or change it to get onto the latest and greatest technology. So sometimes people get caught in that trap as, well, this is what we've been doing and it's been working good enough. Well, yeah, it worked great when you compare it against lip seals, but now we have new technology that can take you beyond where you're at. With absolutely no changes to your systems. They install the same, they're dimensionally the same. It's just the internal geometries are different.
I think to add to that, there's, you know, one thing that we want people to realize is that the you know, people understand that they're pumping systems. Just if we looked at pumps, which make up one of the largest, probably the largest, second to motors percentage of industrial equipment, the pump is the heart of your process, moving fluids throughout your process, and the lubricating oil is the lifeblood of your system. That's what's keeping your pumps turning. And so we all recognize preserving that the lubricants is essential to reliability. There's several other things that we have to do well with alignments and foundations and mechanically designing the system to support the process. But once that's done, it comes down to the lubricant. The lubricant life, we know, makes up a large part of preserving the life of that equipment. And it's the weakest link. It's one of those things that, you know, we alluded to that earlier, that, it's the weakest link in the chain that will break down the reliability. We can spend a lot of money and time and effort into cleaning up lubricants, purchasing desk and breathers, top off transfer containers, doing a tremendous amount of training to help improve our processes and engage our people in understanding the importance of lubricants. But mechanical devices such as isolators play a vital role in that. And so after spending all of this time and money and effort into getting the right lubricant and the clean lubricant in place, preserving the lubricant being the weakest link can diminish all of the time and investment that you've made into getting the right lubricant to the machine. So it's vitally important to have a good shaft seal, a good bearing isolator that can protect your lubricant.
And at the end of the day, in most cases today, we're protecting that mechanical seal.
That's true.
Which shuts, when that goes down, you shut processes down. You know, again, we're very, you know, customers are big on asset utilization. Well, that you fail a mechanical seal, that's the end of that asset. Plus there's probably, you know, most things are backed up. So there's, you know, they don't lose a lot on the process side, but again, that machine's broken and it's not making you money.
Yes, absolutely. Now, where can people find out more about bearing isolators? Where can they find out what might be the best approach for them? Looking at the different types, understand those different types and so on and so forth.
Okay. There's volumes been written on it. The importance of it, Heinz Block wrote a lot of that stuff. The Impro Seal company has a lot of information out there. The new technology that we have, you could go to the SEPCO website and see a lot of what we're talking about there as far as the latest and greatest in bearing isolators. And again, we've just scratched the surface today of what you can do. There's variants off of these isolators that allow you to do things that in the past we may not even thought about doing. But we're solving problems. Again, we're not selling product. There's a big difference.
Absolutely. I will make sure to include links to SEPCO's website. I'll make sure to include links to the Heinz Block articles he's written on bearing isolators so people can easily find out more about this stuff and how it can benefit them. And, you know, if they've done some of those other system parts of the reliability equation, this might be the next step for them.
Yeah, some of the stuff is a little dated out there, but the basics are still the same. You know, some of the technology with the isolators, a lot of Heinz's stuff was written 20 years ago. So things have changed. He's written some more modern stuff. Dave Orlowski from the Impro Seal Company has also written some really good stuff. So you might want to reference that as well.
Well, with that, gentlemen, I think, you know, we learned a tremendous amount about bearing isolators today. We have some good resources and references we can link to. I'll make sure to put links to SEPCO's website, those sorts of things, so people can find out more about that. But I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about bearing isolators, how they help drive reliability, the fact that they are not a silver bullet, they are part of a system. And I think that's important to emphasize. So thank you both, Chris and Woody, for your time today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog.
The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.